Hi folks, welcome to the Money 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 podcast. I'm Surabhi Upadhyay and we come to you every week with some very interesting conversations to help you get your personal finances in order and get smart with your money. Take a friend's house on rent and then go mortgage it with a bank. Then, in case you are unable to pay back that friend and the friend asks for her house back, the bank ends up claiming ownership on that house because the mortgage lies with the bank. That, in a very, very simplistic nutshell, is the Karvi stockbroking saga, the mess that has erupted. And it has raised many questions. Those questions keep tumbling out and clients are wondering what will happen next and whether it's important to understand the nature of the relationship between you, the stock investor, and your stockbroker. What are the do's and don'ts? What are the rules of engagement? And more importantly, what are the lessons that we, as well as perhaps regulators, need to learn from this crisis? That is what we're going to talk about on the show today. My guests are Deepak Shenoy, founder of Capital Mind, and Vivek Bajaj, co-founder of StockEdge. As well as in a bit from now, we will have with us corporate lawyer H.P. Ranina weighing in on all the situations and the questions that have emerged. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining in on this very, very important conversation. Vivek, I'll start with you first. And, you know, I just want to put the disclaimer out there. I think you also run your own securities firm based out of Kolkata. Brokers are under immense scrutiny and perhaps for the right reasons. What are the first thoughts here? I mean, clearly there has been a breach of trust. Clearly, there is an issue of ethics involved here as well, right?
Well, for specifically Karvi, you can use the term fraud as well. Mm-hmm. But if you see the way financial market, the whole industry has functioned, one critical thing has always been important part of the industry is that client asset is always used for the purpose of creating margin, which eventually is used by the client to trade derivatives in the market. Now, this is the standard practice which has been happening. Now, recently, SEBI came out with a circular saying that you can't use client shares to create collateral for the purpose of giving it to the exchange, creating money out of that. Now, because of that SEBI circular, these actions have actually happened. There was a deadline which was given to the brokers that if you have created some kind of a pledge money around client shares, then you need to return it back to me. And there were series of brokers who actually were unable to do it, and then the whole the thing actually came out in the public in large. So if you see, there was a traditional way of doing things and there is a massive transition which is happening in our industry right now, where there are certain processes which is getting established, which will take us long way, but then there is a pain which is happening. So some brokers who have probably not followed it the right way and the right spirit, they are definitely seeing the heat right now. I see this as an opportunity for the next gen brokers who are very clear about the compliances, who are very, very methodological about the compliances, mm-hmm. and you have used technology to the best ability to make sure the client gets communicated with everything which has been done for their assets.
Well, the communication will happen when there is the intent to communicate, when there is the intent to operate in the right manner. I think that's the biggest question. Deepak, let's get your first thoughts in, because what's come as a shock is apparently how rampant this practice is, that the securities actually belong to the client. I mean, I am the investor, I've paid for those shares, but those shares are being used by my broker to raise a loan for whatever other purpose.
Yes, Sophie. In fact, if you think about what has happened, it's actually a systemic issue, because what happened is the exchanges said they want to deal with brokers and not especially with customers, you know, directly. So they transfer shares to broker pool accounts. The brokers are supposed to transfer from their pool accounts into customers' DMAT accounts. And in 2016, SEBI said, let's do it within one day, within 24 hours, you have to transfer it back to your customers' DMAT accounts. Many brokers were not doing so, and it turns out even after that SEBI regulation, they continue to be not doing so. They tell you that you own the shares, but the shares sit in their pool account and not in your DMAT account. Over time, because there's a large congregation of shares in your pool account, the brokers have taken loans on these pool accounts, use that loan. In most cases, it has been given as margin funding to customers. They borrow from NBFCs at 12% and give it to their customers at 18%. So they earn a 6% spread in the way. It's another way for brokers to make money apart from commissions. The problem now is that Karvi decided that, listen, why should only customers get financing? let's give our own entities, our Karvi Realty Limited, which is a real estate company, let's give it also some loans. And turns out 300 odd crores of loans have been given to this entity called Karvi Realty. So essentially, brokers have now used client securities to fund themselves. We've seen this earlier as well. There was a broker called Allied, which turns out to use a client security to actually fund itself through a complicated options trade to the tune of about 300 plus crores. And when SEBI introduced another rule that blocked that kind of special options trade, that broker went bust and he's sitting in jail right now. So, I mean, regulations come in a little late, but when it comes in, it hurts old, age-old practices like this. And you as an investor need to understand that your broker may not be telling you the full story. There are ways to verify what you've done and whether your shares actually exist in your own DMAT account or not. DMAT is very different from your broker. Your DMATs are in only centralized depositories called CDSL or NSDL. You can verify those holdings anytime. You can use your PAN number and take an OTP and verify your holdings. Your broker may tell you you have 100 shares of X, whereas in the DMAT, if there are no 100 shares of X, then you know that the broker has not transferred from his pool to yours. You have to safeguard that. It's becoming more and more evident now that you have to do a little more to verify what I was telling you now.
Sure. Deepak, let me actually bring Vivek back into this conversation as well. Vivek, let's just put out the chain for us. For a lot of people who are perhaps first-time investors who are getting into the market now or who want to get into the market because, you know, you're seeing these euphoric levels once again.
Correct.
What is the chain? Where do the stocks move from the depository to, does it have to go to into the broker's account? And, you know, let's not talk about the broker misusing this to raise a loan for his or her own use.
Right.
The fact is, this issue of margin funding, many a times there's a loan that's taken against the shares that I've bought
right.
to perhaps fulfill my own margin requirements
Correct.
As well, right?
Correct.
But that, I'm guessing, is legal. So how does the chain work?
Right. So suppose you are a fresher into the market and you open an account. So you go to a broker to open an account. So that's a broking account you open with a broker. You may select to open a DMAT account with the same broker. You may not select. So it's not mandatory that you will have to have a DMAT account with the same broker.
Sure.
Right? It's a coincidence that a broker can also be a DP and providing DMAT services to the people. Now, when you open a broking account, typically you do open a DMAT account with the same broker because it eases the whole process of transfer of shares to the exchange via a broker. Because ultimately, when you are buying a share or when you are selling a share, there is a pay-in, payout obligation which is satisfied by a broker. Right? You can definitely have an independent DMAT account with, say, a bank and have a broking account with any broker. But the process of sending that share again to the broker is a cumbersome process. Imagine you do a corporate banking, right? And you have to make payment to someone using a corporate banking account. So with every transaction, you add a beneficiary and then you execute that transaction. You can pretty much do the same thing here. But because there is a complexity involved, so people generally prefer to open an account with the same broker.
Now, you know what? I'm going to go back to this in just a moment because we're also getting a legal perspective on the whole matter. The heart of the situation is also the fact that you need to give a power of attorney because this the shares, when they need to move from the depository account to my account, they'll have to come in via the broker account and the reverse chain, right? So the power of attorney, I'm guessing, is mandatory.
It's kind of mandatory because if you want someone to have the right to take the shares from you, then there is a power of attorney required.
I have with me a corporate lawyer expert, Mr. H.P. Ranina. Mr. Ranina, this question to you, because as we were just discussing, the heart of the matter is the power of attorney and whether we need new rules. Because, you know, as is established, you cannot, you know, buy or sell shares without giving this power of attorney to your broker. But as in the Karvi case, we've figured out it can be very, very grossly abused and misused. So what's the way out?
Well, the power of attorney is given by the client to the broker to sell on the client's behalf. So if the broker, if the client gives instructions to the broker to buy or sell, then the power of attorney will be used. But the power of attorney cannot be used by the broker for his own dealings, which are not authorized by the client. So it all depends on how the power of attorney is worded. Is it a white power? Is it a blanket power? Is it a power which is given to enable the broker to sell and buy as he chooses? or is the power to be exercised only when written instructions or specific instructions on email are given by the client to the broker? So one has to see the power of attorney. I don't think the law has to be changed. The only issue is how is the power of attorney to be worded, and the client has to be very extremely careful before he gives that power of attorney. He must read every word of it to make sure that the power of attorney will be used by the broker only when the client himself gives the instructions for buy or sell. Okay. Then if the broker still misuses that power, that would be a criminal breach of trust. And the broker could be sued, could be arrested also for a criminal offense.
Okay, so that's an important takeaway, that a client will have to go through the details of the power of attorney to ensure that it does not allow any pledges to be created on those shares or those securities. Mr. Raninna, another important question, because now this case has, you know, morphed into something much larger. Now, banks are staking claim and ownership on those shares because they are the ones who gave loans or sort of created those pledges. And in this case, banks claim that, they were told that the shares belong to Karvi, the broker. So again, you know, how does the law come in? And we have two different regulators involved as well. How do you expect this to play out?
I think the banks are right. If the banks were under the impression or were given the impression that Karvi had the right to use these shares, then the bankers did no wrong. They gave the loan and they are entitled to the securities on the basis of which the loan has been given. So I think the bankers are absolutely right. Now, that again, I think the two regulators are involved. But apart from regulators, I think the real issue is about the broker who has committed a breach of trust if he has just pledged his shares belonging to the client without the permission of the client. Then there's a clear case of breach of trust. As far as regulators are concerned, the Reserve Bank is very clear. They have allowed the finance companies to raise loans against properly pledged shares. There's nothing wrong with that. And SEBI also doesn't get involved because SEBI gives them the permission to open a demat account subject to the rules of SEBI. So really the issues are not of, overlapping of jurisdiction of regulators. The real issue is how the transactions are worded and how clients and customers should be very careful when they give any power of attorney.
So, finally, Mr. Raninna, what's the recourse for, the clients that stand impacted? Because right now there is a dispute on the ownership of the shares for which they would have paid money. So what is the legal recourse they have?
The legal recourse of the clients is, of course, to get back the shares. Once they get back the original shares, of course, they are protected. There's nothing to worry about. As far as between the banks and the broker is concerned, the banks have a right to sue the broker for having illegally, pledged shares which did not belong to the broker. So that is where the dispute will arise, and now there will be a legal battle between Karvi. So unless Karvi or the broker, repays the entire loan to the bank, then only the matter will get resolved. So, otherwise, the banks have a right to proceed against the broker for illegally pledging shares which did not belong to the broker.
All right, Mr. Raninna, thank you very much for joining in and weighing in on the legalities involved in this matter. Thank you very much for throwing some light on these issues. Let's get you one more legal view. We have with us Bharat Chugh, partner, LNL Partners and former judge. So thank you for taking this call. We just wanted to get some understanding of the legalities that are arising out of the Karvi issue. At the heart of it seems to be the issue of power of attorney. Now, how does one deal with this? Because you need to give your broker the power of attorney in order to trade or in order to invest. But then how does one prevent its abuse?
Thanks for having me. I think most of these power of attorneys have traditionally been extremely wide, where the client is pretty much giving all the authorization to the broker to deal with the shares as they like. And sometimes they also include the power to transfer them further. So I think the biggest takeaway for the clients from this would be to ensure that the power of attorney is not wide and it gives very limited rights to the brokers to only deal with the shares in accordance with the instructions and not pledge them further or transfer them to accounts where they can't be transferred in order to prevent misuse.
Vivek, coming back to the point, how to engage with your broker. Let's get back to the textbook.
Right.
What are the do's and don'ts, and how does one ensure that these kind of situations don't arise?
See, pledge has become a bad word. Hmm. But actually, we should understand that pledge is the need of a client. They want their shares to be pledged so that they can get leverage, they can participate in derivative market, and that's what brokers do when they are providing limits to the client. So if you are a client and if you don't want any kind of leverage or any kind of extra exposure, then don't pledge. You can give a standing instruction to the broker that I don't want my shares to be pledged. I am just a cash market investor who is taking delivery and who's interested in giving delivery. No broker can touch your DMAT account because your DMAT account lies with NSDL and CDSL. So if you log in their app on a daily basis, and if you look at the stocks which is there in your DMAT account, no broker can touch that until as you have given the instruction to the broker to pledge it and give limit against that, right? The problem also lies with the fact that most of the clients, they just sign everywhere. They don't look at the sections. All the legal documents are quite complicated for them to comprehend each and every clause in the legal document. So somewhere a simplicity there and a little bit of engagement, more consciousness towards their asset is required.
You know, I want to go back to the point that you made that no one can touch, no broker can touch your shares if they're lying in your own DMAT account because it's with the depositories. But what happens in cases where your DMAT account is with the same broker? And then are we raising a question mark on that practice? Is it more prudent to, you know, let your shares lie in a DMAT with a different bank maybe, a different entity's account?
See, broker can be same, but the shares always lies with the depository. Unless you have given that power of attorney to the broker to take it from that particular account.
But that power of attorney, as you know, you've said, as experts have said, anyway has to be given, even for a regular cash market transaction, right?
Yes. So in power of attorney, as the lawyer also said, that there are a lot of prints, fine print is there.
Read that power of attorney very, very carefully. I guess that's the point that you're also getting to. Let me bring in Deepak as well. Deepak, you've been hearing, you know, a lot of legal views. Now, what's the way forward? What are the checks and balances that you think are most important that need to be enforced?
So, Surabhi, here is one thing that I feel. Firstly, I think the exchanges should start crediting client DMAT accounts directly. They currently give the shares into a pool account. That is unnecessary. Give the shares directly to a client DMAT account. You'll need a power of attorney only to sell shares, not to buy them. If you're a person who says, I'm going to buy shares and I'll sell at my leisure or I might not sell right now, then you can actually hold back a power of attorney and you can give something called an offline depository instruction slip. There is an online version that's coming that's not really real time, but we can change that. I hope we do. That is another thing that you can do, saying if I'm really scared of that my broker will debit my shares, then please don't give a power of attorney and use a depository instruction slip whenever you need to sell shares. There are certain brokers who will do things this way as well. There's no problem with that. Secondly, I think you need to trust your broker. There's a problem in this whole pledging system. Some of these financiers have taken a power of attorney on a DMAT account given by a broker, assuming that the broker owns all those shares. This is an incorrect assumption. I am sure all financiers are aware of this, that these are actually pooled accounts and therefore not shares that they should be allowed to sell whenever they want. But they've gone to court and they want a court opinion. I hope the court gives the order that this is an incorrect assumption. What should actually happen is that anytime anybody pledges shares, those shares should be taken away from that DMAT account into a separate DMAT account owned by the financier. That means if you pledge shares, it cannot sit in your DMAT account. It has to be moved to the financier's DMAT account. So it will be, you will be well aware that these shares are pledged and not with you and not even in a pool account. So that is, I think, another part that has to be done in terms of a systemic change. Right now, what I would say is if you're worried about your broker, please verify your holdings. Please make transactions. Within 3 days, you should see the shares sitting in your DMAT account. If they are not, please tell your broker to move them to your DMAT account. You can move offline any shares from any broker's DMAT account to any other broker by giving an offline depository instruction slip. So if you feel suspicious about your broker, move them away. The idea of margin trading applies to less than maybe 10% or even 5% of people who will ever need that kind of facility. So if you find a broker that actually does not give you margin trading facilities at all, that might actually serve you in a much better step than going with people who offer margin facilities and whose power of attorney, therefore,
sure.
will contain wide-reaching terms of
right.
being able to debit or pledge your shares. So these are the things I think as a hygiene we should be looking for, and you should do this with all brokers, whether it is your current broker, a broker you're evaluating, whether you're with Karvy or not.
Sure. So Vivek, you just heard Deepak raise some important points as well. Let's again go back to the drawing board. The most important do's and don'ts, starting from the beginning, from selecting a broker to making sure that you're going through reading the power of attorney clearly, just illustrate the steps that must be followed if you want a safe broking experience.
Yeah, so selecting a broker is mm-hmm. always more of a business call, where you get a lot of enticement from various brokers in terms of various deals they have to offer. So you'll have to actually see their background.
Mm.
And you know, so much of information is available in NSE website, in SEBI website. As a prudent investor, one should actually spend some time and mm-hmm. look at those information.
What like, specific information are you talking
like
about?
Like, for example, one of the things which I shared with you is the what kind of arbitration has happened in that with particular broker, how many cases have been filed
so
against the broker.
So that provides a whole background check on the broker.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So how many active clients are there mm-hmm. and how many people have actually complained mm-hmm. and what kind of resolution the broker has already initiated. If you see that data which is there in NSE website, you get a pretty good understanding mm-hmm. about the quality of the broker
okay.
the person is. And obviously bigger brands and the kind of net worth the, mm-hmm. the broker has, because ultimately in India, with a very marginal capital, you can actually start a broking business and handle as high as 1,000 crores or 2,000 crores of collateral, because the capital adequacy norm in India is very liberal as far as broking is concerned.
Mm.
So one should look at the balance sheet of a broker.
Mm-hmm.
Also, what are the different businesses a broker is into?
Sure.
Whether a broker is also doing prop trading or not.
Mm.
Because you see, ultimately, these capital or the assets which the client has, broker is utilizing them to generate higher return on their capital, right? And that will only happen once they leverage it for higher return business opportunity. So typically prop trading activity by a broker or a real estate business activity by a broker,
these are the red flags. These are the red flags that you watch out for. Make sure you select the right broker. Once you've selected your broker, then what is your advice? Like, I mean, Deepak and the other experts raised several points about, checking your power of attorney very, very carefully, through the tedious wordings there. Be any specific instructions that can be given to ensure that your shares come to your account and are not misused?
See, there are very simple things like give your right mobile number.
Okay.
Give your right email ID.
Mm-hmm.
Trace the messages which you are getting. Because in today's world, every trade, every entry in your Demat account is getting alerted as an SMS.
Mm-hmm.
If there is any alert which you think is not something which you have done, you can immediately raise a flag. And there is a pretty good redressal mechanism by SEBI mm-hmm. where you can actually launch a complaint.
I actually got a question on Twitter saying, mm-hmm. please tell me how I can raise an official complaint against my broker.
Yeah.
So you have to do it via SEBI, I'm guessing.
Yeah, so SEBI has this clear in the home page. They have given mm-hmm. the option there. You can mm-hmm. launch an official complaint at the broker, or social media is there. Use Twitter. All the service providers have become very proactive in making sure that the client engagement is well.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from that, I would say that be more proactive in terms of looking at your statements.
Okay.
Because ultimately, all your assets are there in the form of a physical statement. So if you log in into NSDL, CDSL account, if you log in into your broker account, you will see clearly these assets lying there.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no harm in going back to the broker and asking for a physical copy of that statement.
Okay.
Because then you have much better legal sanity, a document with you. So anything goes wrong, you can actually play a better legal battle with the broker.
Okay. All right, Vivek. Thank you very much for some of those hygiene elements, reminding us of the basic principles on which I think an engagement must be built with the stockbroker. Thank you very much to you and to Deepak also for joining in and for shedding light on some of these important issues that are arising out of the entire Karvy conundrum. We will keep, of course, tracking this and getting you the latest development. Right now, that's a wrap on this edition of Money, Money, Money. But before we go, we tell you to be very, very careful with your investments, with your stock trades. And we also tell you to be very, very careful on the road. So here's a little piece of advice, a little request. Do not text or use your mobile phones while driving. Follow road signs and traffic laws. Stay safe, be the better guy. Network 18 and Hyundai's initiative towards ensuring road safety in India. That's it on this week's podcast. You can catch the show at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesdays with repeats on Saturday and Sunday mornings only on CNBC TV 18. You can also find us on the CNBC TV 18 YouTube channel. Do send your feedback, comments, queries. Catch me on Twitter. My handle is at Surabhi Upadhyay. That's S-U-R-A-B-H-I-U-P-A-D-H-Y-A-Y. Don't forget to add the hashtag money. Catch you next week.